We're going to get started today, and we're going to be talking about placement for the next couple sessions, because this is a time of the year where for new grantees, the first cohort has just been completed and often starting the next cohort. And for more experienced grantees, you may be on your second or third cohort, but this is a time of the year when graduates are either found their jobs or they're looking for their jobs. So we're going to be talking about placement for a little while. And there's a couple of areas we're going to be talking about, those things that take a little longer to put in place, and then those things that you can do immediately. And we're fortunate today to talk to Janet Curley from Santa Fe Community College, and she'll be talking about what they're doing and their experiences. We always start with news from Washington, and Heather's off today, but she talked to Rachel, and Rachel wanted to tell everyone that the review process is in process. The way the grant schedule is set up, they can't award any grants till October 1st. Shortly after that, and it may take a few weeks, or it may extend in November, but that'll depend on the workload at EPA. But sometime in probably middle, late October, early November, they'll be announcing the new grantees from this last RFP. I'm going to put in the post-session notes the schedule, which I put in last time, and we'll probably continue and keep updated, just so you have an idea of what the schedule looks at this very moment for the best information we know. For those of you who are just, this is your first time with the PLC, if you don't get post-session notes, or if you haven't gotten an invite from us, just send your contact information to Heather, and her email is hkballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, at eicc.edu, hkballou, at eicc.edu, and she'll get you on our participant list, and we'll get post-session notes that has the information presented today and additional references and schedules and that type of thing. In terms of EPA, they're mostly focusing right now on the grant reviews, and they're in full progress now. And if you haven't been rejected because you didn't qualify under the first criteria, then you're on to the evaluation criteria. And it's pretty much a silence period until the announcements are made. The next thing that EPA is, of course, concerned about is looking at National Brownfields Conference, and that's going to be in December. The conference itself is 11th through the 13th of December. Now, in conjunction with that, we didn't have an all-grantees meeting as we usually do every August in Alexandria because of this shift in schedule. The new grantees won't be announced till late October, early November. So we wanted, and Rachel and EPA wanted them to be included in the all grantee meeting, and also any new grantees and experienced grantees. So we thought that together, to reduce grantee costs, rather than having to go to the all grantee meeting in August and then going to the National Brownfields Conference, which is the biggie in December, we could combine them, and they were willing to give us a full day, December 10th. We're still working out all the details, but it looks like it's going to be a full day, and it's going to be a great program. You may want to hold up on your reservations. We're still working out how the hotel is going to work, but if you have, that's okay. We can addend your hotel accommodations. Why we're holding up on that is we're trying to get reimbursements for the first 2 days of your stay. That would be the 9th and 10th, because we normally reimburse all grantee people the hotel. So we're trying to get approval from EPA to reimburse you for those 2 days. And then, of course, the national conference, which is 11th through the 13th, you'd be on your own on that. But it'll be at the same place, and we'll have conference rooms and breakouts. The nice thing and exciting thing about what's going to happen this year is we're going to do some things with NIEHS. We're working on their worker career program, doing some joint meetings where they have a worker career training program that's similar to the EPA Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. Similar, but there's some differences, and we're trying to arrange some joint sessions where we can sit down and exchange ideas between the two sets of grantees, and we're doing that. The other big thing, I think, that plays into what we're going to be talking about today is every vendor that's national and many local vendors will be in the display area. And it's a good time to make some contacts with national manpower firms. Everyone will be there, and it's a good time to stop at the booths, and we're hoping to get some of those employers into some of our sessions. We're going to be focusing a lot on placement over the next year and contacts. The two themes that we're going to be working on primarily are placement and sustainability for attempting to get additional funds into our program. So this would be a great opportunity to mingle and network with national and local employers. So that's coming up on the HMTRI side. We'll keep you in touch, and we'll be nurturing you along as soon as we get firm commitments from EPA on what we can do and what the agenda is going to look like. And as all grantee meetings, we'll be asking you to help facilitate, help us with this conference, because it's a peer-to-peer learning, and we use our grantees, as we do in these PLC sessions, to coach, use experienced, knowledgeable grantees to help the new grantees, and basically to talk about not only the successes, but the issues, the problems that they have. In the notes, I'll also be putting in some announcements, some webinars that are coming up, some meetings that are coming up. Probably the most notable of those is an Environmental Workforce Development Workshop that's going to be occurring in August. This is in Florida. It's being put on by Region 4 on August 21st and 22nd. They're two little half-day workshops. If you're near Florida or in Florida, you may want to register for one of those. All the information is there, and it's basically addressing workshop development in Florida and all around the country. Well, today we're going to be talking to Janet Curley from Santa Fe Community College. This is a very interesting program because they're faced with many of the challenges that other grantees don't have, and many of the challenges other grantees do have. First of all, they're semi-rural. They're in Santa Fe and surrounding counties. They've got 22 Native American tribes. They've got tremendous amount of disparities among the population that'd be trained, tremendous poverty, tremendous unemployment. Janet can correct me when she starts, about 16.5%, 17% unemployment rate.
Depends upon where you are. There's pockets like that, yes.
Yeah, pockets, 25% below poverty level. So we've got tremendous amount of disparities, and it's not like an urban core, but you've got all the same problems and issues that people in urban areas. Later we'll be talking to someone from an area like New York, where it's more urban, and they have a little different set of problems. But with that, Janet, I'm going to thank you for talking to us today about your program, and I'll turn it over to you.
We just finished our last training cohort under our current grant. Instead of doing the training at Santa Fe Community College, we moved our training site to the Northern New Mexico College campus in Espanola, New Mexico, which is about 45 miles northwest of Santa Fe Community College. We accepted 26 people, and we graduated 25. It was interesting that I don't know what the rest of you's attrition rates are, but usually I have about a 10 to 20% attrition rate. But in this particular program, in this rural area, the first time this training has ever been offered, people were very dedicated to it. In terms of placement, the real challenge is we have a national laboratory, Los Alamos National Labs, about 35 miles just west of this valley system. But the problem is a lot of the people cannot pass the security clearances requirements because the Department of Energy has very specific requirements. And a lot of the we have a very high drug problem in the Espanola Valley. So first of all, finding people that could even work in the hazardous material field and then finding placement for them. But I'm really proud to announce that three of my graduates have been accepted into the Legacy Waste Training Program apprenticeship starting at $18.25 an hour. And it's a 18-month program, and then they will be working on cleaning up remediation of the legacy waste problems at Los Alamos National Labs. And three of my students have been accepted, have been hired by the new LANL, Los Alamos National Labs, Waste Management Group. As a matter of fact, LANL is having a meeting with all three colleges in this area on the 22nd of August to discuss what their training needs are, because they need 65 waste technicians this year and next year. So that the problem for us is finding people who can meet the training requirements. But for the people who did not meet the DOE requirements, we are in the process of trying to find jobs for them in warehousing and transportation locations, and we've just started that process. So if any of you guys have any good ideas, please let me know. But the biggest problem that I face is people don't want to move from the rural area to where the jobs are. I have plenty, Aerotech and some of the other headhunter organizations are calling me all the time asking for people, but they have assignments that are anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 months outside of New Mexico. So that is a real problem with getting my people jobs, because they don't want to travel. But I have been able to get, because of the need on the Pueblos, all of the Native Americans that I have trained have gotten hired by various individual Pueblo environment departments. So that's kind of where we're at right at this moment. I'm now, we're only about 6 weeks since our graduation, and we've already got, about eight people employed. So I've got five or six that are in, interview processes, and then I've got 10 that I'm tracking and watching closely, okay? And I'm sure all of you have that kind of experience where people try to disappear. Any questions about what we're doing?
Well, it's interesting that, now, what is LANL? Could you?
Los Alamos National Laboratories.
Oh, okay. And that's different than Legacy Waste?
Los Alamos was established, during World War II. And when they were doing all of the research up there, they just sort of threw all of the hazardous waste into the arroyos. And so until 1985, when the agreement between the Department of Energy and the EPA was written under the, to get federal facilities into compliance with environmental and cleanup standards, all waste was not disposed of, shall we say, properly. And so the Legacy Waste Project is a $10 billion, 10-year project to clean up what is called the legacy waste, meaning the waste that were generated from 1942 to 1985 at Los Alamos.
So that's a waste project and a legacy, and then the other one is actually employment at the lab. Is that
correct? Yes, and some of my students are going through the process of coming in as a contractor, through these various headhunter firms, mm-hmm. to see if they're going to work out, because, not everybody is suited for the kind of work that we do in the hazardous material handling profession, which is the focus of what our training program is hazardous material management, waste handling, chemical storage, that kind of stuff. So, And Los Alamos Waste Management has identified to me 2 days ago that they need 35 to 65 people per year to environmental waste technicians to handle the current generation of waste that's at the laboratories.
You bring up some interesting points, and anyone who chime in, we keep these mics open for this reason, chime in if you have questions or want to add anything to this. But there's a lot of things you brought up here that I think we need to talk about. And the one that first comes to mind that you just discussed is you found an employer that needs people with specific, not only specific certs, but specific types of people. And this brings up a point for those of you who are new grantees or even those who haven't started a cohort. In your labor market assessment, ideally, you go deeper than the peripheral stuff you need for the grant. And sometimes you do that just to get the grant in. But once you have time on your hands, you want to start digging in, and this is the perfect time before the grant is awarded. Find out who are basically going to be your angels, who you can work with, and who has openings or potential openings. And I throw that into labor market assessment, and because that's a broad term we talk about as a critical issue, but it's really also a placement issue. Placement begins with that labor market assessment and determining who your best chances for employment are. And different people do it different ways, and we'll probably talk at a future session about one of our grantees who gets into city council and is associated with the mayor's office and actually finds out who all the vendors are for environmental remediation and deconstruction and construction. And he zeroes in on those very specific employers. Well, once you identify a half dozen or two or three or one, in Janet's case, you can sit down and say, okay, what do you need? What kind of people do you need? And what kind of people can't you hire, which is just as important. Now you're shifting back. I've always said these grants work backwards. You got to work at the placement and then work back to curriculum and then work back to recruitment and then work back to marketing. Let's take, for example, Janet's case where they might say, well, we definitely need ASWAPR that everyone needs. We might need a radiation course or two. We might need enclosed space, a confined space. We might need tall ladders, for that matter. We're going to be doing work on tall ladders. We might need someone with some lead. They may not know exactly what they need, but they can give you an idea. So now you go back and you start looking at your curriculum design. And what can we do here that EPA will pay for? How do we arrange our grant and our wording and our work plans that this is hazardous materials remediation? Now you have to think about who can complete these courses successfully. And now we get back to your recruitment. And it does no good to recruit people who can't be placed. So again, we're working backwards. It sounds callous and it sounds kind of cruel. But we're rationing out jobs, and in the end, it does no good to train someone who can't be employed. So now the question is, do they have to be drug-free? Do they have to have a certain minimal GED requirement? Is there a certain level, a 6 good, a 7, 12? What do we need to do in terms of our TABE? When we do pretesting, do we need to do pretesting? If we do, do we have to get someone with a 12 in math and verbal skills, or can we go lower? Do we have to require drug tests before we bring them in? So we're all the way, we're working back, and we're going to recruitment, and we have to be extremely selective on our recruitment. Unfortunately, we're taking low-hanging fruit. In this case, because we've got 20 seats, and there are a lot of, everyone is deserving. If they're unemployed, they can't get a job, and they're in an underserved area, they're deserving. So we need to work backwards. I think someone put us on hold. I have to apologize for that. There we go. Hopefully that'll die out. So anyway.
Mike, I'd like to add one thing. One of the things that came up with my employers was it's also, and for those of you out there that aren't doing the training, but some, it also, I would add two of the things that Mike just mentioned, interviewing your training providers and making sure that they understand that this is job training, not just the technical certificate training, because many of these people that we're hiring don't have the real understanding of the industry and the soft skills that go into getting these jobs and keeping these jobs.
That's exactly right. You know, and with that, I'm going to bring up a few things you've talked to us before that you brought up that I'd like to run through quickly. These are strategies that have been used by Janet that seems to work really well. And one of your points was integrating instructors into the program. In other words, they need to buy into the program. If your instructors are hired, you go out on RFP, you hire, they come in, they train, they do everything they're supposed to do. That doesn't work. You want to bring in an instructor, and I think of community college instructors this way often. They really take an interest in their students, and they almost are the ones which will help you place. I remember when I was in school, my physics instructor said, you know, gee, you ought to go to this college. I had the academic instructor didn't say, well, he said, well, you're in engineering. I like this school. You ought to look at it. Now, that's an instructor. An instructor will say, hey, have you thought about this particular company? Maybe I could get you into it. Remember, if you're hiring instructors that are health and safety or remediation instructors, they've got their own list of contacts, and they may very well know who's hiring, who's not, who may have opportunities. So you want to, you're exactly right, Janet, in terms of integrating your instructors and have them dedicated to not just training, but to the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program.
The waste manager at Los Alamos was very impressed with was she was interviewing, 15 people. And of them, about 4 or 5 were my people. And when she asked in the interview questions about the Hazardous Waste Manifest, not only did my students have a manifest in their in their folder with them, they pulled it out and showed her the sections that they were supposed to look at and double check and explain to her how the manifest works. And none of the other applicants or people she was interviewing did. And that really impressed her. And that was one of the things in the training that I emphasized to people is, these are the questions that are going to be asked. Be prepared to answer these questions at the interview.
Well, one of the things you've done, Janet, I don't know if you're doing it now, is you were doing videotapes at the college. They have a group of visual arts people who make videos as part of their curriculum.
Yes.
And I believe at one time you got them to come in and video your graduates or potential graduates, both to learn how they're presenting themselves and also as a potential of either putting on YouTube or showing to a potential employer.
Yes. We still do that. Not as much as we did before, but we still do that. And we work with our Workforce Solutions Department. And after they graduate, they go and spend 2 hours with the Workforce Solutions program people and do mock interviews with them as they help them with their resumes.
I think that's excellent. And, of course, you do other normal things that you may often people think are they don't think about it, but, your normal training schedule 8 to 5, just like they would have in a normal work week. You need to get those students into the groove of going to work on a regular basis, 8 to 5. They need to have that work ethic. The other things that I found that was interesting that I noted from one of your conversations was you use a combination of media, digital media whenever possible, and a lot of online tools and team building. And the reason, this is subtle, you wouldn't think about it, but if you get into a place where they've got computers, you don't want your graduates coming in and not being familiar with the keyboard or not struggling with looking up things or using Google or using an online tool. If they could go in and you might say, well, what do you know about this? Or this is what we use. And he says, oh, that's good. We use that at school. That is a high, those little things are, you're hired. You know, you, Oh, you know how to do that. Okay.
All my, I would say 80% of my training materials are now, I send to the students as PDF files, and I don't give them training booklets anymore. I give them tablets, and they have to, you know, demonstrate that they can use email, download files, handle spreadsheets, handle documents, and do data entry from their tablets, or sometimes they bring their own computers, but they have to demonstrate that in all of the classes that we have.
Many times, if people know the words, know the name and cliche, they've got a real head up, as you had just said, when the other graduates don't know those acronyms, they don't know those tools, or they're not familiar with those certifications, and your students do. They're hired. Now, often, and most often, actually, once people are hired, they're trained on the job.
Correct.
For the specifics. But to get in the door, if you could demonstrate that you know the words, the other fellow doesn't know the words, you're vetted, you're certified, you may have $5,000 worth of certifications, where the other person doesn't. You really do have a head up. And those are all very subtle things that if you just incorporate that into your training program as you're going, it gives you a nice, all of these end up as placement strategies. We don't think of them that as, but that those are all part. In fact, one placement strategy that Janet uses that not a lot, one or two other grantees do, she has a radio. Do you still have your radio show?
Yes, I do. I have a radio show, and I interview my people. I've been interviewing them as they get jobs on the radio.
And this is very subtle because it's an awareness for employers. If an employer is interested in or just happens to be watching or listening to the radio show and finds out, oh, you know, there's a program here and they've got certs and they need, and they get a HAZWOPer, and I need someone with a HAZWOPer. It's not a national lab, it's a transportation company or it's a scrapyard. And he may not be that sophisticated, but he hears the word HAZWOPer, has his waste and graduates, and I need someone and I'm going to have to get him certified. And he knows how to do material handling, or he knows the words, so he knows his way around. I'll contact them. And that's part of that awareness of networking and getting the word out and letting employers know what you have. We try at HMCRI, we do a scan every 8 months or so of, we call it the employee finder, and we try to scan all the grantees and find out when their graduation dates are, very important, the contact information, who to contact, what certs that they're going to have, their core curriculum, when graduate dates are. We try to get that out to potential employers, national employers. And Jen's got a good point about there are a lot of national people like Aero. Many, many grantees work with Aero. Unfortunately, they are national. They'll be at the Brownfields Conference. And they call in people from all over the world. Unfortunately, you have to travel, but that can also turn into a positive. Some people, I can travel, you know, or I want to travel. Tribes are both, fall both ways. There are some tribes, some tribal members who like to use the tribe as home base, and they don't mind traveling. In fact, they enjoy traveling, so they would go out on an assignment and get paid a lot, but come back home between jobs. It's like a lot of construction jobs, many construction jobs, you're going to be gone for 3 months or 6 months maybe. But you'll travel, you'll get paid a premium pay, you'll get a housing, room, and board. So there are people who that can be appealing. So you could turn that two ways. It could be a detriment, but some of your students may say, well, if I get a chance to travel, I'm kind of looking for that. So that goes two ways. Another thing I think Janet brought up in her presentation today is you're going to have three levels of people. You're going to have people who will get the jobs on their own. They'll have the job before they graduate. They're just so good. And you actually see them probably in the first week of classes. They're go-getters, they're motivated, they're fast learners. Then there's some that you're going to have to push a little. You're going to have to work with the employment service on. It may take a little longer. And then you've got the hardcore and the people that are really difficult to place. And these might include ex-offenders when in places where ex-offenders are not allowed to be hired. We'll be talking at another time about Ban the Box. And there are organizations that they welcome ex-offenders. Some companies are started, they're construction primarily. They're scrap yards. They were founded and owned by ex-offenders. And they find that they're excellent workers and they welcome them. And the trick is finding those people. You really, one of the things we suggest, we mentioned as a key best practice is never send a graduate on an interview unless you've already talked to the employer and know what his requirements are. You don't want him to go there and find out, oh, you've got a record or you've got this violation or we can't hire you. Don't even try. Why discourage him? So you want to know, if you have control over that, you want to know what are the requirements of that employer before you. You want him to succeed in this interview, and that's a big help. Another thing that goes along with that that is suggested by one of our other grantees is talk to the graduate and ask him what his schedule is going to be. I'm going to be talking about hard-to-place people. What are your schedules for the next 90 days? Do you have court appearances you have to go to? Do you have child care issues? Are there some family issues you're going to have to take care of? And have a frank one-on-one. You don't want someone to get into a job and then in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, oh, I got to take a week off, or I have these court appearances or whatever. Whatever demands and emphasize, you really want to have a good presentation in your first 6 months. Are there any issues that are going to be an issue? And you want to talk to the employer before he goes out on this interview. Would these be a hindrance? Would this be a problem? Do you need someone there all the time? Is it all or none? Where if he has to go to court, he's going to be laid off or at first be laid off. And if they say, well, yeah, I need this guy all the time. Well, that's a warning sign that you may not want to send that particular grantee out to that interview. So that's about placement. And anyone have questions? We're going to be talking about placement again in the next PLC. But I also wanted to talk a little about tracking, and we do try to keep these at 30 minutes, but we'll go fairly fast. And one of the conditions of these grants is that you track your graduates, and tracking is hard. It's as hard as placement, harder than placement sometimes. How do you track your students? And once they're gone, there'll be some that'll be gone forever. There'll be some that they went through the program and they decided this isn't the program they want. They'll be decided they went in a different field, or they're happy and I'm good. I got what I wanted. I'm good. You need to try to engage your graduates on a continuing basis as a club or a team that once, and some of our grantees take this approach, and it's a neat one. Once you go through the program, you're members of a fraternity or a sorority. You're in our group, and it's a forever group. And as being a member of that forever group, this is what you get back. You can come back for recertifications if you need help. If you need some technical assistance or new publications, come on back, and you can sit in on some classes if you want to brush up on something, or if you just want to come back and sit on a class in an afternoon. Come on in. And not only that, we want you to come back and be a mentor to our new students. We want you to sit down in the round table every morning when we sit down and shoot the breeze, and we want you to talk about our experiences. Now, what this is doing, we're tying placement and tracking into the same thing. Those graduates that have jobs and are going to be coming back will be the people who will help hire your new graduates. they will be the ones that will recommend, oh, this guy, I met him, and he's good, and he fits into our culture, and he'll be a good guy. And or he may even be a supervisor. We've got many graduates of our programs who have turned into supervisors, and now we're looking for new people. You don't want them looking for new people somewhere else. You want them to be looking where they're familiar with your program. So you want to keep this club going. And, of course, the question is, how do I do that? And that's not an easy thing, but often many programs have Facebook groups, and they'll try to keep that Facebook group active, or they might do it with YouTube, one of the social media applications. And once you join, you don't leave. You stay in that group. And you may not even be working in environmental remediation now. You may have dropped out and you got this job in some warehouse somewhere. But maybe you decide to come back and you need a research, or you coming back, or there's an opportunity, and since you did a HAZWOPER and you've got this background, they're considering you for the job. You want to try to keep this Facebook group as active as you can. And, of course, it's really important you keep a contact list with who graduated, when they graduated, and maybe some notes of the types of students they were or some of their qualifications. And you want to keep this list on hand for a lot of reasons. You may get Aero to call you, or even a local manpower firm or a company that you've made contact. This is the nature of this business. I need 50 people, and I need them in the next 3 months, and it's going to be a six-month assignment. You can go through your Rolodex or your database or your Excel file, and you can say, well, he's not a recent graduate, but this is where he's working. Here's his phone number. You can call him if you want. And you want to keep this database on a continuous basis. So hopefully our grantees will not be a one-off deal. You might have two or three re-ups. And, of course, a three-year grant may turn into 6 or 9 or 12 or 15 or 20. So this is going to be a cumulative thing where you now, after three cohorts, you've got 60 people that employers, when they need people, can come to you and say, hey, can you do me a favor? I need these people. And you might say, well, everyone's placed now, but here's some people you may want to call. And you can give them their phone numbers. And, of course, you want to talk to your graduates to ask them if this is okay. And this is a good reason for them to come in and talk to you and keep you updated. Often you might even want to send out questionnaires to the same list of what are you doing now, who are you working for, and that type of thing. So you'll get a good idea of tracking. And this is what we call tracking. Find out where your graduates are doing. A lot of tracking, it turns out these days, to be anecdotal. This is what they're doing. As Janet said, I've got 3 in this program. I got 6 in this program. I may have some that have turned into supervisors. I may have some that are hiring. These are great anecdotal snippets that can make your program even better as you go along.
One of my graduates just took over health and safety program as director for the General Services Department of the state of New Mexico.
So, you know, he'll be hiring.
Yeah, I know. I already contacted him.
Awesome.
And another one of my graduates just took over being director of water programs for the state of Florida.
Fantastic.
So I have some great, you know, there's some stellar performers, and then there's the people that are calling me and asking me when I'm going to send them out to a job. So
yeah, this is tough. And, you know, in closing this discussion, and anyone has questions, please speak up. You're not going to be able to place everyone. You know, they want 70 or 80%, but that still leaves some that are just not going to be placeable. And what do you do with them? And that's tough. You try to keep them interested, and you keep pushing. And you may have to make cold calls to some of your employers. If you have, say, you have a scrapyard, and you say, you know, you call them up, can you use this guy? Or you try to find an alternative. There are some alternative occupations, like flagger. This is a flagger is someone who if it's near a hazardous waste site, he flags. He works on the road and flags people down, but he's got a HAZWOPER, and he may have some other transportation course. You call up the public transportation department. Is there a chance that you might need a flagger? I've got a fellow that would work well in this position. He's got certifications and he's been vetted. So when you get down to those people that you can't place anymore, those go into the pile of, I'm going to try as hard as I can, and I'm going to do some cold calls. And I may have to think out of the box of, you know, these may not be the top of the line sustainable occupations, but I can get them a job. And don't feel bad if you can't place everyone, because that happens. Some do, but not everyone. Does anyone have any questions? We're going to be talking about placement some more, because it is the whole reason that this program is started. Janet, I really want to thank you. I think you're doing a tremendous job, and keep it up. And those of you, a lot of the grantees are on this line, have done tremendous jobs also. And let me know if there's some ideas you'd like to present. We'll talk about them in the next couple sessions. We'll be sending out post-session notes on Friday. And between now and the next one, I hope you all have a good couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.